president and CEO of Millennial Strategies, joins us. Jeffrey?
How we doing?
Well, I woke up earlier this morning, probably a little earlier than you did, but I got to tell you, I was very much surprised. We just had, you might have heard him, we just had Larry Zacherys on, and the voters spoke. I was a little surprised at the differential as far the winning differential here for Larry. How about you?
A lot of your statewide New York City media called that race the biggest upset in New York State politics last night. I mean, Zacherys being able to defeat Boyle by a resounding 12-point margin signifies, you know, a real stunning rebuke of an inexperienced sheriff candidate, someone who didn't have direct law enforcement experience, rather, and affirms the assertions that the Newsday made in their endorsement of Zacherys. Really fascinating stuff. And, I mean, what's even more interesting than the fact that Boyle lost is what happens now that Boyle lost. Does he stay in this race? Does he, does he take the Democratic line? This has been rumored. It's fascinating.
Well, that's an interesting point. Who knows? You know, we assume that the senator will stay in. You know, I guess the big question is, you know, the Democratic line. You know, we know about the conservative and the independents lines here. But that's a good point. Who knows? You're right.
Right. I mean, there's a few scenarios here. I mean, Senator Boyle can is a lawyer, so he can be moved off the conservative independence party lines pretty easily, much like Rick Glasio back during the governor's gubernatorial primary in 2010. He could be made a judicial candidate in New York City somewhere where he'll be destined to lose and effectively end his campaign. Or he could double down, and as is rumored, he could take the Democratic line and run with three lines in November and hope that's enough to be able to pull this off in a county where Trump won by 9 points.
Yeah, and, you know, we had somebody on earlier, made a good point as well. You know, these are the trends, it seems. You know, it's a matter of, you know, an individual who had really no political background at all, who was a member of the NYPD, who was a member of the Assistant Chief of Police at Stony Brook, you know, who did his thing in law enforcement, has a pretty good track record. And it was just an individual doing his thing, you know, got the word out that by saying, you know what, I got the experience.
I think it was Paul Morocco from Newsday last night on social media who drew a parallel between this race and the 2015 district attorney's race in the general election between Madeline Stengist, who is now the DA, and Kate Murray, who at the time was the supervisor of the town of Hempstead, where it was a similar dynamic playing out, where you had an individual of Stengist who was deeply qualified, who was a prosecutor, not a politician. In fact, that was her campaign slogan, running against a career politician in Murray who did not have a robust background practicing criminal law.
Right.
So, I mean, there are very clear parallels that voters want someone with experience. And I think it's also true that if you look at his campaign filings and look at how he spent some of the days before the election, you know, Boyle may certainly have taken this opposition a little too lightly.
No question. We're talking with Jeff Guillot, Suffolk Community College political science professor, Millennial Strategies as well, head of. I think it's important to point out here, Jeff, before we move on, that one shouldn't get too primary happy, so to speak. You know, I always remember Sean Walter losing out a couple of years ago to Joe DiGiglio. It's important, and of course, winning the general election, but it's important for people to understand it's the primary. So you have an individual that could maybe hold three-party lines here going forward. So to get primary happy, you know, might be sort of a rush, in essence, to justice, so to speak.
But you're also talking about the will of only 22,000 registered Republican voters being expressed in this primary, which is a pretty terrible number. It's worse than Nassau County's Democratic number that we saw yesterday. So, I mean, you're talking about an infinitesimally small representative sample of the overall Republican electorate that participated in this election. I mean, Zacherys won, and he should be congratulated for it, but at the end of the day, it's a very low amount of people, and there will be far more reporting in the general election.
No question. Okay, let's move on. Interesting, in Smithtown, you called it yesterday.
Yeah.
You called it yesterday. I'll give you credit here because you basically stated that this could be a surprise here as far as Vecchio moving on. Now, listen, he trails by about 40 votes or so, give or take. There's still a lot of absentee ballots to be counted, roughly about 450 of them. This could go either way here, but still, he's in the fight of his life right now, Pat Vecchio.
He absolutely is. I had a sneaking suspicion this was going to be a really, really close one, and it did not disappoint. And now it comes down to which campaign ran a more aggressive absentee ballot program.
Right.
An often overlooked part of political campaigns, especially when you're dealing in an area like Smithtown that has, to put it lightly, an aging population. Campaigns need to be aggressive at getting absentee ballots to people who they think are going to be voting for them in preparation for a scenario like this. I believe Vecchio said last night there's about 450 ballots that could be counted. So
right.
this thing could still very much go either way.
No, this could sway towards Vecchio easily. But nonetheless, he's going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I mean, these kinds of things have gone on for months. What will happen is the Board of Elections will engage in their own manual recount in Yaphank. And there's still another step that Vecchio can take if he's not satisfied with those results or wishes to contest them. This could end up in state Supreme Court.
No question. Okay, in Huntington, I think, you know, listen, I thought St. George would put up a little bit more of a fight, not the case. Edwards wins easily. And, you know, you set up that GE now between her and the assemblyman who has a lot of buzz about him, and Chad Lubinacci. That's going to be a big-time race come November.
Well, yeah, you know, speaking specifically to the primary, I think that St. George found out the hard way that that money is mission critical in this stuff, and he was severely outgunned by Edwards' war chest, who was able to mobilize a larger campaign operation and rely on her name recognition. And again, you're only talking about 5,500 total Democratic votes.
Right.
So, you know, it's a small sample, but obviously Edwards knew what she was doing and targeting them correctly. And you're right. I mean, you're talking about now a municipal government that has been represented by the Democratic Party in its supervisor seat for the last two and change decades. But this is a town that went for Donald Trump in the general election. I mean, yeah. And Lupinacci is a guy who is a moderate, has a history of working across the aisle. He's an affable guy. He's a college professor, so I certainly respect that part about his game. And I think it's going to be really, really close.
All right, so Monica Martinez, and I said yesterday, I didn't think she would have any trouble. Listen, Angela Ramos.
I felt the same way.
Angela Ramos really going off her husband's name. We didn't hear a lot about her. We offered her plenty of time on this particular program. She didn't take it. But if you're going to run a race, you got to get your name out there. And outside of being attached to the assembly over there, nobody knew about Angela Ramos. No one knew where she stood. All she did was criticize Monica Martinez for not doing enough for the district. But that's not going to get it done most of the time.
This was a deeply problematic and not well thought out vanity exercise by Assemblyman Ramos that really kind of blew up in his face. And I wouldn't be surprised if the byproduct of this is a primary challenge to the assemblyman himself. Yep. Next year. This has only served to divide that community even more, and it's unfortunate. And Monica Martinez is someone who 2 years ago won the general election without the benefit of the Democratic line.
Yeah.
And to think that she could be ousted on name recognition alone, I think was foolish.
And in the 11th district, it got ugly at times. And we had Steve Flatterin on last week going against Tom Baraga's son-in-law. Baraga, of course, term limited. His son-in-law, Michael McElwee. You know, there was a lot of back and forth here, taxes, pain, you know, it was a lot. It got ugly. But Flower wins.
Well, look, I think Steve has a long history in the community, and I think that he's very much been involved in the revitalization of the Bayshore area, which is part, which, you know, has pieces of this district. And I think name recognition plays a big role in these primaries. As you can tell, it's really, really hard to overcome. Now, Larry Zachary is able to do it. But by and large, I mean, you know, having institutional support and having folks have you seen your name on government mail for the last, you know, decade or so that Flatterin has been in the town, I think is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah. Polakowski, really no surprises here, moves on. And to give Frank Vetra credit, I'll give him a little credit. I mean, he expected not to win it. Obviously, he wanted to get his name out there. Nonetheless, Polakowski advances. Now, this is a biggie because, you know, the last two times that Sarah Engel won in the general election, it was minimal stuff. You know, she's going to have to go out there and prove her point come November. She's got a lot of work to do. I don't think this is going to be one of those races like against Steve Chicarico, You know, where you'll win by 10, 12 votes. Chicarico didn't do a thing, by the way, to get his name out there. But this is going to be a different story. I think Sarah Hager is going to have the fight of her life here.
I think, I mean, in that district, for a Democrat, every race is the fight of your life. It's like, I mean, it is the closest thing to New York's first congressional district, where every time you appear on the ballot, if you're a Democrat, it's the fight of your life. Just ask Tim Bishop that.
All right, short. Go ahead, finish that. Finish point.
No, and this one is going to be absolutely no different. This is going to take a very well organized and very aggressive effort by the local Democratic Party to get this thing done.
I didn't say yesterday, but I knew she would. Curran wins. Laura Curran wins. We spoke to her yesterday. She annihilated George Maragos, and I think George was a good guy. George kind of knew it. He didn't get a lot of play. Never got his name out there the way he should have. You didn't see a lot of ads going on in here. There was a party switch. Remember that one time? He's going to support Laura full slate here. I mean, you know, listen. He made that party switch to knock off Mangano. That was his mindset there. But Laura Curran with a pretty good victory here.
I mean, it wasn't just a pretty good victory. It was a resounding defeat for Maragos.
No question.
I think George kind of played out his strategy on social media during the last month of the campaign. He was trying to put together a cohort of traditionally underrepresented voters and get them to turn out and build a winning coalition of about 15,000 votes that way. The problem is that left your prime electorate the sole audience for Curran, and she was able to turn them out very, very effectively. The interesting narrative about this race, apart from the size of Curran's win, as well as the relatively dismal turnout, which you and I talked about yesterday, is if you go down the ballot to the comptroller's race, Amma Yossin got 5,000 more votes than Maragos did. And Yossin was someone who didn't raise a lot of money, certainly enjoyed the name rec that Maragos did. I'm interested in trying to understand why that is.
Yeah.
Was that more of a rebuke of her opponent, Long Beach City Manager Jack Schneerman? Or was it something else? I think a ED by ED analysis of the county would kind of bear that out. But that was a very interesting result, that Yossin was the top vote getter of the three insurgent candidates countywide, and it wasn't close.
Nope. And finally, I've got 15 seconds. Mr. Blase himself, Mr. de Blasio, with an easy win, as we both said he would. And listen, unless you're Hillary Clinton going up against this guy's going to get another term. And that's the way it is.
Yeah, it is kind of unfortunate that a real challenger didn't materialize.
There's nobody in the race, Jeff.
Democracy. Yeah.
There's nobody. There's nobody nobody to go against him. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, his general election opponent is Assemblywoman Nicole Malliotakis from Staten Island, who I think will run a credible campaign. She's a well-liked politician within her district. I can only hope for a spirited debate about the future of the city of New York that gives people a real choice on Election Day.
Guillaume, well done.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.